First question, right here.
So, like you said, you're busy all the time.
Active. Busy means unavailable. People that are busy are usually high on their mom's couch, doing nothing all day. They'll never get anything done. Active people get shit done. I'm very active.
Action. Excellent. So, how do you do your sleep? Because it sounds like your wife plugs you in at night or something because you're so active.
Yeah. So sleep's the number one habit that I have. I have a sleep coach, number one. So understanding the purpose of sleep. It's a third of your life, by the way. So why not make it the number one habit? And it has the most, it has the most value in your life, believe it or not, because sleep is for two things: recovery, those who recover better, perform better, and access. Accessing information from a higher source, intuition from a higher source, intelligence from a higher source, inspiration from a higher source, and energy from a higher source. So imagine when you, like me, have been practicing sleep for 18 years using every mechanism, modality, and having a sleep coach, the amount of recovery I have at my age and the information that I'm accessing, and then even learning how to transcend it. So my day starts at 9 p.m. So I don't work with a man-made constructive calendar. I do work within the context of man-made constructive time, but I have an unwinding routine at 9 p.m. So I put my mind, my body, and soul in a position of recovery and access. No negative energy, no drugs, no alcohol, no caffeine, no housewives. Sorry, lady, that's negative. That's shit. One of the other big ones, which was the hardest, and if anybody's married, I don't care if you're the man or the woman, anybody's married, why is it when you're married that the last question right before your unwinding routine is like, how are we going to afford college? What are we going to do about Marissa's boyfriend? Right? Like, and now it's time to go to sleep. Are you kidding me? Right? There's none of those conversations right before I go to bed. You want to wake up at 4 a.m. and ask me? Not a problem. 9 p.m., it's off limits. So my day starts at 9 p.m. I recover and access information, go right into meditation to transcend the information, then go right into my workout, a minimum of an hour a day on my health, then usually into the study of time, relativity, or other research, then family. So I have non-negotiable behaviors, sleep being the number one, health being number two, family being number three, then finance, faith, study of time, and study of relativity. When I say non-negotiable, 7 days a week. And why non-negotiable? Because I don't have to worry about circumstance. So no matter what the circumstances of the day are, interest rates, arguments, weather, I have half of my life is guaranteed to be in a divine direction. 90% of all the outcomes and successes I have come from the non-negotiable behavior. 10% is just I'm really good at prioritizing and reprioritizing, pre-prioritizing according to the interest rates, the weather, the arguments, the negative energy, all that stuff. I have more energy, or I utilize more energy. I have the same amount of energy as everybody here. We all have the same amount of energy. I've just learned to interfere with it less. I shorten the distance of resistance that we create for ourselves. So I'm accessing, I coach some really famous athletes that are still playing, and they shadow me. They want to shadow me. And I'm 57. I promise you I'm not stronger, faster, in better shape than they are. Or I was when I was their age, by the way. But by 4 p.m., usually they're sleeping in the back of my car. They're out of energy because they've interfered with it all day long so much. There's plenty of energy. It's how you're interfering with it. Thank you. Thanks. All right, next question. Right here, Nick.
Hi. What was the worst piece of advice you ever got? And were you able to make a positive impact on the source from which it came?
I think the worst piece of advice was either my mom or Justice Scalia. When I graduated law school, I got a job offer to be an oil and gas litigator for a lot of, in 1992, for $150,000 plus bonus. And I took a job in the internet. My mom told me the internet was a fad. I was making the biggest mistake of my life. But Justice Scalia, after I started my job, doubled down when I demonstrated Westlaw to him in 1992. On a DOS computer, 9600 baud modem, he said, son, nobody will ever do research on a computer. You need books. So what I learned was from my mom and from Justice Scalia is that just because somebody loves you or is smarter than you, even by subject matter, topic, and expertise, does not mean they know what the fuck they're talking about. And I will tell you, that I learned at an early age because a lot of people laughed at me, scoffed at me, and made fun of me because I'm a dreamer. I go for it, whether it was playing football or being in the internet. Those ignorant, arrogant people never bothered me. They pissed me off like Tom Brady. Like, oh yeah, I'll show you. I used to tell people all the time, nothing ever extraordinary happened from a normal person, only crazy people. So you calling me crazy, and that's fine with me. Name one, whether it's Einstein, Jobs, Gates, Bezos, all those people are crazy. So thank you for that. But the scarier one that I learned is, and this is as a parent, the most dangerous people in our lives that will limit our imagination or our self-image are the people that love us the most. So just be aware when you ask someone that loves you or someone that loves you gives you advice, that they are more afraid of you that for you than they are for themselves. So the advice that they're going to give you, because remember, there's only two types of people, people that don't know what they don't know and people that don't know what they don't know. So this person loves you, they're afraid for you, and now they don't know what they don't know. So they're going to give you advice based off of fear to protect you. It's usually not a good place to take advice from fear. And so when someone who loves you gives you advice, number one, appreciate it. Tell them, I really appreciate you care that much about me, and take their advice like a handful of sand. If it resonates with you and you're like, yeah, you know what? I think that is true. Then hold on to it. But most of the advice, especially from people that are ignorant and arrogant, meaning they love us and they want to protect us, just let it fall through your hand. Don't have to get into wars with your people who love with you and get defensive and have a need to be right and a need to be offended. What you have a need to be is grateful that someone cares and loves that much about you. Why destroy it? You can just articulate it. You know, it's just the same way as if you are in a relationship, one of the best things you can say to someone is, I hear you. You don't have to say anything more. Like, and if you read like John Gray and other people, it's just an acknowledgement of appreciation. You give me your opinion, and you know, we differ in so many opinions today, and we're being separated by social silos and being fed information. What I suggest you do for anyone that you disagree with is appreciate the difference. We are not equals. We should have equal opportunity. This is America, the United States of America, providing everybody in the United States of America equal opportunity. Nowhere does it say you're equals. I don't see anybody, thank God for you. Nobody looks like me. We're different. I don't see, John Lovitz is the closest person I've seen that looks like me, and he's still not. And I'm not as funny as him, and he's funny, right? But here's what's happening. We somehow think that we all need to be equal, and then we go ahead and separate ourselves because of differences instead of unite ourselves by appreciating and acknowledging each other and learning from each other, right? I hear you. That's cool. I learn from people I don't agree with. And I know one thing, when I'm in a disagreement, neither of us know what we don't know. We don't know. If anybody here was certain about something, tell me, because I'll make billions of dollars off of it tomorrow, but there's no certainty. 24 hours, if it's not the last day of your life, yes. But besides that, there's too much wasted energy on people just literally creating a separation in our differences instead of what was meant and purposed for us to learn from each other and unite with each other. And some of the greatest ways is just say, I really appreciate that. I appreciate your opinion. I want to think about that and learn from that. Would you mind if I had some questions later for you or some suggestions? Does that sound fair? Or just simply, I hear you. I hear you. That's cool. I hear you. And let it go. All right. Very good. Very good point so far. Yes, sir. Can I have a sip of that iced tea? Anybody ever go to Swenson's? They don't pay me, but I love this place. I literally asked LeBron if he would franchise it to California with me.
So I guess that what I have to add is not that much like a question, but more for an advice, not only for myself, but for young-minded people, like for young people like me. One thing that I connected with you a lot was losing my mom.
Your mom.
I lost my mom when I was 18 years old, and it has been the hardest thing in my life. I started business when I was 18 years old, and I was in the streets. Nobody really helped out. Now I went in like a denial mode, didn't listen to no one. I kind of got into a place that no one's going to help me. I got myself, never got mental help or anything. Got to a point that I was making pretty good money and everything became about me. I just exited my business and accepted Jesus as my Lord and Savior. So I'm happier than ever. But what would you advise for someone? Because I still want to be in business and also help people that have gone through the same thing that I've been through and be able to help them, you know, mentally and stuff. Like,
sure.
What advice do you have for someone that has been in business that exited because that didn't fill him, but
yeah,
wants to get back into it to be able to help others as well?
Yeah. Well, I was in that position at a young age. I didn't lose my mom till older. So the hardest thing in my life.
Yeah.
And I'm 57. So money's interesting because there's always more of it. And money is important if you know for the sake of what you're going to use it. So many people like me when I was young, I'll be happy when I make a million. I remember telling my mom at 5 years old, I'll be happy when I make $1 million. I'm going to buy you a house and a car and never have to work again for a million. That's a good deal. But I told her that. Then it was, I made my first million 9 months out of law school. I'll be happy when I have 10 million. Then it was 20, 30, 40. And the funny thing is, because I lost for the sake of what? Every tens of millions I made, the less happy I was. Because I had more of an attachment and an identity to money. You are far more advanced than I was. I literally was at a point, I remember my wife, we had over $100 million. And my wife would say, what's the matter? I was 32 years old. What's the matter? My bank account went down. How much? $116. Why are you so excited? Bank account's up. How much? $600. Like, I had a sickness. But my identity was so closely attached to where my bank account was, how much of it I had, how much and what I had around me, that I had to learn the hard way because I had to lose it. You didn't lose it. So what I tell people that have a position, a change in the position where money's not an issue anymore, so you feel empty. You feel empty is take a new for the sake of what? Ask yourself, for the sake of what am I going to make money today? For the sake of these young people, you're going to create an institute? Are you going to donate your money? Are you going to feed people? Are you going to build community centers? Are you going to, what are you going to do? I don't ever wake up without a definiteness of purpose. I know what I want in my divine direction, and I align the meaning of the past, living on the streets, living on food stamps, all the things. I align that meaning to where I want to be. I don't let it limit me. And then I do my best, learn lessons, and have fun all day long for the sake of whatever it is. You will never be. You will apply your why if you can answer the question, for the sake of what am I doing this? For the sake of what am I going to sleep? For the sake of what am I working out? For the sake, it will get you there. And if that doesn't, just use the Michael Jordan rule, which helps me on the days. So like if I wake up and I don't want to work out at 4 in the morning or 4:20 in the morning, and I'm like, yeah, but this is for the sake of living long and being healthy and being there for my great grandkids, living to over 111. And I'm still like, nah, I don't want to go to the gym. Then I say to myself, Michael Jordan's waiting for you at the gym. He wants to work out with you. And in my mind, if I'm like, would you go to the gym if Michael Jordan was waiting for you at the gym right now? And if the answer is yes, which it always is, then I get my ass up and I go to the gym for the sake of living a long, healthy, productive, empowering life. So ask yourself for the sake of what. If you need some mentorship and coaching, I'd be happy to help you because I've been there since I was older. Congratulations, by the way. I'd love to work with you. That's awesome. All right, next question. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Oh, that was good. Came out of nowhere.
First, I want to say if David gave me his phone number like 4 years ago, I got it from someone else and I called him and he actually picked up. So if he does pick up,
I call back too if I don't pick up.
Yeah, we did a podcast.
I don't have my phone on me now, so I'm not picking up.
Yeah, so he does pick up. But yeah, my question is, can you tell a story when you were first getting into business of maybe when spiritually you worked with someone that you had to disconnect from, you know, like what was kind of like, what kept you grounded through those moments?
Yeah. It's interesting because that didn't happen also till later. And it was my wife 2 years before I lost everything. that I had all these clues. My mom told me I was lost, told her she was lost. I remember telling my mom, I'm lost? You make $17,000 a year as a teacher. I make that sometimes in half a day. I'm lost? And she goes, case in point. She's, I'm worried about you. Don't worry about me, worry about you. My dad sent me a jacket with no pockets, told me I was lost. Money literally would not buy me happiness. I was just like him, told him to F off. 6 years later, running the most notable sports agency in the world, my best friend in the world, known him since the fourth grade. He actually asked my wife at sixth grade camp for me. That's how close we were to go steady. And she said, no, tell him to ask me himself. And took me years to date her too. But he told me, I invited him to the Masters to go with me with Joe Montana, Wayne Gretzky, and Warren Moon to a private jet party in the Masters. And he's like, I don't want to go with you because I don't like who you're with and what you're doing. And I told him, F off, I'm not doing what those guys are doing. And then it was 2 weeks later that my wife told me she was going to leave me and told me take stock in who I was and what I wanted to become, that I was going to end up dead. Told her to F off, added in my big home in Rancho Santa Fe with my Ferraris and Lamborghinis going like this. Who do you think did all of this? How dare you talk to me this way? You want to leave me? Fine. Went to bed, woke up in the morning full of hate. I hated my mom, my dad, my best friend, and my wife. 2 years before I lost everything. And somehow God spoke to me because I saw that jacket that my dad gave me for my 30th birthday with no pockets, the one where I told him to fuck off and hadn't talked to him in 6 years. And I realized I don't hate any of them. I hated myself. So what I did was took stock in who I was and what I wanted to become. And I started practicing who I wanted to become. Notice I said practice. I'm still practicing who I want to become. It's daily. I have 5 daily practices. I'll send them to anybody. I'm very disciplined in my practice. I also shorten the distance of resistance when I'm not in my practice, when I'm interfering in my practice. I only have 2 distinguishing criteria of activities in my day or any reaction or response. It's, is this aligned with my divine direction or is this interfering with it? There's no complicated thing. It's just simply, you know, are you need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, or worried? Is that going to get you into your divine direction or is it interfering with it? That's how simple this stuff is when you get disciplined with this perspective. And for me, talk about firing friends. That's the only thing my wife said. She said, when I begged her to stay with me, she said, look, you can make mistakes, but you need to try. And these 3 people in your life, you need to fire. And they were old, old friends. So I went to them and I said, hey, this isn't about you. This is about me. I don't like who I am when I'm around you. And I really apologize, but I'm not going to ever talk to you again. 2 of them dead, 1 of them in rehab. And my whole life changed when my new book's coming out at Super Bowl. I actually got the first copy today at home called Don't Do Business with Dicks. Don't do business with dicks or anything else. All right. Yes, sir.
Hey, Dave.
What's your name?
Matt.
Hi, Matt.
So with all the traveling that you do and kind of, you know, always moving around in different cities, different states, how do you maintain your schedule and be, you know, stay a student of your calendar when, you know, you're taking off at 9 a.m. and landing and it's 9 a.m. again or something like that?
Of course. How do
you stay consistent regardless of where you are?
Well, 2 things. I have different coaches to help me with sleep. So remember, sleep takes out a third of your day. So being intentional about sleep helps me out in understanding where that is. But here's the thing about location. So many people get caught up into my travel. Like, how does he do it? With all of this travel, how does he do it? Travel is irrelevant if you have non-negotiable behavior. It's just a circumstance. It's the same as weather. Why would travel have any other impact on my life when half of my life is non-negotiable? I don't say, I'm not going to get 8 hours of sleep if I'm going to be in New York or on an airplane, a train, an automobile, I'm not going to be in New York. I'm not going to get my 8 hours of sleep in San Francisco, Japan, Dubai, Zanzibar, Tanzania. No, I have a coach who helps me to make sure that a non-negotiable first thing in my life is you're going to get 8 hours of sleep, regardless of the circumstance, the location that you're in. You're going to spend a minimum of an hour a day on your health, regardless of the location you're in. So let us work together to get a different balanced cardio stretching routine that you can utilize outside, inside, in a hotel room, or in a full size, you know, what's it, Flex Lewis's gym, the Dragon's Den, right? That's easy to get my workout done. But, you know, tiny New York hotel room, I got the workout for there. 7 days a week, non-negotiable. Location is just a circumstance. And we make up all these other excuses. It doesn't have to be location. How many of us use the mortgage rates as a circumstance to stop you from where you want to be or better, or the weather, or an argument, or some other non-planned activity? The one thing about non-negotiable behavior, if you run about 12 hours of non-negotiable behavior, including your sleep, you have 12 hours of wake time to get better at what? Pre-prioritizing circumstance. You get better at it. Because you have half of your days already set. You don't really give a shit what happens because you know you're going to get that shit done. Now, I don't get it done 100% of the time, but I never stack two L's in a row. Bedros helped me with that. Like, he's like, I go, what do I do? Like, I feel like such a hypocrite. Like, I tell people, you know, I get minimum of, for me, it's 7 hours, but I call it eight because the math's easier. Minimum of 8 hours of sleep, minimum of an hour with my health, and minimum of an hour with my family. And I go, but some days I don't. And he goes, that's okay, right? It's an exception. He goes, if you do it twice, you're a hypocrite because now it's a habit. So don't stack those L's. And I don't. I can tell you, I miss on different things, different days, but I never, it becomes even more prioritized over sleep. If I miss one of those things, it's like, I'm not missing it tomorrow. I don't care what happens because I'm not stacking two in a row. Did that answer your question, friends? Yes.
So it sounds like your family was a lot different than what you created. So a lot of entrepreneurs, I think, expect to have supportive family and friends early, and we kind of consult our loved ones for advice. Mm-hmm. You talk about a lot in the conference. How do you overcome? Do you seek other mentors, surround yourself with like-minded people? How did you get from how you grew up to where you are?
Yeah, great question. So yeah, I grew up under the doctor, lawyer, failure type of people. Very scarce people, and it got them to where they wanted to be. And so number one, I had this Dr. Wayne Dyer when I was really young. I heard him say, other people's opinion are none of your business. Other people's opinion were none of my business. And then I went and did what I wanted to do. So I wanted to play sports. My coaches became my mentors. The biggest lesson in sports, I think, that's missed is a really valuable lesson that I have in my life. I learned through sports to love what I don't like or love about what I love. I'm going to repeat that. Playing sports, most people play sports because they love it. They pick the sport they love and they love it, sometimes more than anything else. But if you play a sport at a competitive level, you need to learn to love what you don't like or love about what you love. It's also the best piece of marriage advice for my wife. Forgiveness is intertwined in there somewhere as well. And so I had all these lessons and mentors in different areas of my life. And when I didn't have one, I just stuck to what resonated with me. And there's plenty of fear, doubt, wanting to quit, different circumstances, but I just reminded myself that if you have the desire to be what you must be, you will become what you must be. If you have the desire to be what you must be, you will become what you must be. But that's the only common denominator of successful people. And I've been around, I was with Lee Steinberg, got to be around all these amazing athletes and then billionaires, the owners. And I picked out right away, every single one of these people had a desire that they must be what they can be. There was better athletes out there. There's better business people out there. But the common denominator of these guys, they had the same thing that I have. every day when you want to quit, you're not going to quit because you have a desire that you must be what you can be and you will become. Right here, then here.
Hi, Amy. I'm a new business owner for about a year. I was just wondering if you had advice for strategies on where to put the initial income back into your business, like as far as marketing, business coaches.
Well, the first place you put your money back into your business is you. Is you. Pay yourself. Get in the habit of paying yourself. Whether it's 5%, 10%, pay yourself. That's the first place you put your money back into your business. Never put 100% back into your business. Pay yourself first. You will thank me in the long run. So after that, what you want to do is align the different capabilities of the company with what's doing well, what's stable, and you think is doing well. Prioritize those things that you listed out in your company by what's doing well, what's stable, and you think is doing well. Seek advice from people that are already doing well, stable, and doing. And then in the end, understand your own timing and risk tolerance. And go ahead and you'll have the number one choice in what percentage of the investment you want to make in the number one choice. After you, you're the number one choice, the number two choice, number three choice, et cetera. Biggest mistake people make in business and in life is they don't know their timing and risk tolerance. You need to know your timing and risk tolerance in anything you do. Go to college, get a job, start a business, have money. If you don't know your timing and risk tolerance, you will end up resentful and guilty because circumstances are going to happen. Risk will avail itself. Even if you're successful, if you don't have your timing and risk tolerance, you'll be like, oh, I could have done better. If I would have done this, I could have sold later, right? I could have started earlier. The coulda, shoulda, wouldas, and guilt and resentment will overwhelm you. All right, next question.
I guess my big question, without making it too long, is, you know, I'm hearing a lot from Andrew, like, but a lot about these big businesses, $1 million, we got this, got that. I'm like in that bucket where I started a small farm business based on a family recipe 2 years ago. I'm lucky enough that I have a really big paying day job that kind of like supports my small business basically. And sometimes I'll use a bonus or whatever I get to help, with the business. Now, it took me like 3 years to finally find somebody that would like co-manufacture for me, help me scale the business. But I'm still that small business that's doing exactly what he said. Like, you know, when comes tax season, I'm writing everything off. I'm trying to get my tax return so that I can put that money back into the business. So I'm a small business, and I'm hearing a lot about like these big businesses. Like I've got my LLC, and then now I have two smaller businesses under that, two DBAs. But what's your advice for like somebody like me that needs to find, and I don't necessarily need investors, but I'm trying to scale my business now, but I want to get into that same position where I can use all those techniques that he's talking about, but I'm not quite... I'm not, it's going to take me years to get to that.
Cancel. First of all, just because you say it's going to take that long to get big, now you just go ahead and made it take a long time.
Well, I don't think it'll take that long.
First of all,
on my way,
how do we scale business?
I mean, to get to what he's talking about, 20 million.
Cancel. All right. So why are you limiting yourself? So the only thing that stands between you and $20 million is capabilities. And so when we're looking at where we are today and where we want to be in the future, it is the capability that we have aligned with what's doing well, what's stable, what we think is doing well, the industries, careers, and jobs also as well that are related or synergistic with our own business of what's doing well, what's stable, what we think is doing well. Most people don't take inventory of capabilities. Therefore, they keep on making the same mistakes again and again and live in the zero-sum game, and they take incremental growth. There's plenty of people that go from 0 to 20 million, 0 to 100 million, 0 to 200 million because they understand aligning capabilities. Today, capabilities are not just human. They used to be. They're virtual assistants, they're AI, they're SaaS solutions, and people. But none of it will be maximized unless you do an analysis and a continual inventory of capabilities. Your own capabilities, you started listing some of them out, but other capabilities of connecting the dots backwards of a $20 million. I promise you, you've never, because of the way that your self-talk is right now, you've never said, what are the capabilities if I wanted to be a $20 million business tomorrow, what capabilities would I have to have today? I mean, literally tomorrow, the 20, whatever. I lose track of dates sometimes. So I know it's like 21st is tomorrow, maybe. Okay. Think about this. This is all that stands between you and where you want to be is, okay, here's where I want to be. I want to be there tomorrow, 24 hours from now. What capabilities would I have to be there tomorrow?
I'm off to the races now, but.
Yeah. So we go get those capabilities and we utilize our timing and risk tolerance to figure out how long or the distance between us and it, what already exists. The wisdom and the faith that's necessary to shorten the distance of that resistance that you're creating for yourself. And so I work with tons of smaller businesses like this that come to me and they say, oh, you know, I do this. And then I help them through the timing and risk tolerance and the capability analysis. And then I introduce them to the people that are already there. And all of a sudden, 9 months, they're like at $30 million. You on my cell phone? All right, good. Yes. I promise you can get there in a year. Thank you. She's running away now.
I'm stuttering.
Thank you. Who was that?
Rock Thompson.
Oh, right on.
So we connected. I'm a mother of seven.
Damn. Thank you.
That's a children's story with me. But when we were on the phone call.
You're a hero, in other words. Mother of seven.
Thanks. But I was building a pro cheer league. And then I found out if we built our own network, we would not give money to ESPN. It was a concept at the time. And I'm like, hey, Dave, this is great. Rob's like, you got to talk to him. And
yeah.
Great, Annie. Take your time, prove it out, and then come back. So I'm coming back to you. It works.
Nice.
And we proved that universities could have their own campus. They can have their own network. We make way more money than having ESTS. But now that I've made it work and I've used like different universities and examples, I am facing exactly what kind of said you were going through. You're crazy. Nobody's going to get into their own network. Well, we have a course to teach them how to get their own equipment. But now I'm facing where the networks don't want me to win. They see what I have. They've logged into my technology. And now they're trying to come against me. So it's like that airplane going into the wind.
Yeah.
How did you get through that? What advice would you give me?
So don't work against them. Work with them. So I would go to a network that is currently in existence that does not have the same traction as ESPN, but already has the credibility and distribution, so that you take like Cheddar, Reach TV, FUBU, whatever one, and I get you the list. I know a lot of the CEOs of those companies. I would be interested because I work closely as an advisor to Reach TV. They're in all the airports and hotel rooms. They would love to be in every school. And they already have programming, but if you would work with them to put them into all the schools, they would make the cheerleading, you know, the 5 a.m. to 10 a.m. content or give you whatever you needed because they have freedom. And they also have what Reach TV is so powerful and why I, you know, my shows are on Reach TV, not only because it's airports and hotel rooms, but what makes it so powerful as a business tool for me is if I'm at gate 26 at Newark and they have the Reach TV at the gate, that they, because they have an agreement with the NFL, so they're playing the games and they have a CNN deal. They have big stuff on the TV. But what's super cool is if I have a business meeting and you and I are flying out together, I'll let them know what flight I'm on and they'll play my shows on that one TV while the rest of the airport's showing the Eagles game. And then that guy's like, holy shit, did you know? Oh, no, what? Oh my God, office hours, playbook, 2 minutes. Yeah, look at that. That's cool.
But no, I think that's great because we have a profit share with athletes. They broadcast.
Now you have something to offer because you have a lead and the colleges want the content. You don't have time or money to build out what FUBU and, you know, all these different smaller Cheddar. They would love that deal. If you get Cheddar into the colleges, that'd be awesome.
I'd appreciate it because when I faced, they want to steal it.
So yeah.
They don't want to partner.
Well, I know the CEOs of someone, they won't steal it. They're not that people. All right, we got time for one more question, Nick? All right, right here.
Oh, Mr. Barnes.
Mr. Barnes, the first guy I saw yesterday.
So, Dave, for any new entrepreneurs who wanted to create or start having strategic partnerships, what are three things that they could do to start doing it?
For strategic partnerships, one, identify. A lot of people talk about strategic partnerships or strategic investors, and they don't identify the capabilities or the identities of those. So the number one is identify. Two, align. So when I identify the person, I use an open-minded, open question guide to align, which says, hey, what are you doing today in the subject matter, topic, or expertise that my business is in that I want you to be a strategic partner or investor in? So what are you doing today? What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? What's working? What's not working? What do you know about it and what don't you know? And if they have an open mind and are working in my space and I find that information, I then can say, would it help you if you are a strategic partner of mine in this area, we could work an opportunity in this way? Or would it help you if you're a strategic investor of mine and we could do this together? Or I might find, do you know anyone that can help me? After I gather the information of what you like, don't like, what's working, what's not working, what you know and what you don't know in the subject matter, topic, or expertise. Now I'm just expanding more opportunity because they're now knowing what I'm looking for, and they're identifying who they know in their spheres of influence, which is exponentially creating more options, opportunities, touches of favor, more statistical success in me getting a strategic partner. So one, identify, two, align, and then three, learn from the conversations to adjust. All right. Thank you, everyone.